ABC Listen. Podcasts, radio, news, music, and more.
Good morning. Welcome to AM. It's Monday, the 8th of December. I'm Sabra Lane, coming to you from Nipaluna, Hobart. Hundreds of group homes that care for almost 2,000 of Victoria's most vulnerable disabled people risk of closing when a state government funding package dries up at the end of the month. The not-for-profit organisations running the homes say the National Disability Insurance Scheme funding that they receive also from the Commonwealth Government is not enough for them to keep the homes open. Jessica Longbottom reports.
A 51-year-old Connie, who has cerebral palsy, has lived in her group home with four others in Melbourne's north for almost 20 years. She can't speak and has limited movement and relies on her carers for almost everything. Her mother Val says the staff here are like family. Connie's known some for decades and even attended one of their weddings.
This is her home, her first home. Our home where we live, I live, is her second home. The staff, we're overwhelmed with the support, the care.
But Connie and her parents' world could soon be turned upside down because of a funding gap.
My daughter's 51, and so that means I'm in my 70s too. And I'd hate the thought that this place would close and again to start to find and to be secure with the right people to work in the home.
Connie's group home is one of 500 in Victoria that have been receiving billions of dollars in extra funding from the state government over the past 8 years. That's on top of residents' NDIS funding provided by the Commonwealth. The homes received the subsidy because they used to be run by the Victorian government, and when the state handed them over to five not-for-profit operators in 2018, it pledged the funding to ensure minimum staffing requirements and wages above that of other group homes. But that subsidy ends in 3 weeks.
The very sad fact is that a number of homes next year will become unviable.
Dr. Martin Laverty is the CEO of disability provider Aruma. He says the loss of the subsidy, combined with residents of the homes not being properly funded by the NDIS, means 55 of Aruma's former Victorian government homes may be forced to close.
It's now urgent to find a pathway to ensure that all 2,000 residents across the 500 homes operated by not-for-profit organisations can have certainty.
But when questioned by the ABC, neither the NDIS or the Victorian government said more funding would be available. In a statement, a spokesperson for the NDIA said it had processes in place to manage participant safety if their providers cease services and can help affected participants transfer to new providers.
It's a best house.
For Paul, who lives at a former government-run group home in Melbourne's east, leaving is not an option. The 47-year-old has an intellectual disability and has lived in his home with four others, including his best friend, for 8 years.
What's so good about it?
We have parties. We have dinner together.
If the homes close, Paul Healy from the Health and Community Services Union believes most staff will leave the sector because they won't be able to get the same wages in other group homes. He fears the most severely disabled will end up in aged care and hospitals or in poorly run homes with fewer staff.
They can't advocate for themselves, so they can't say where they want to go and they have no one else to advocate from. They're going to be lost to a system.
Connie's mother Val is terrified that if something happens to her or her husband, that's what could happen to Connie.
What about these human beings? They are alive. They are people and they have needs also.
It's Val, a mother of Connie who has cerebral palsy, ending Jessica Longbottom's report. New reports put the spotlight on a stark failure with the National Disability Insurance Scheme. The Grattan Institute's found the NDIS spent $6 billion last year on people with psychosocial disability, but there was no help for 130,000 adults with the greatest need. The Institute has made four recommendations to fix the problem, as Annie Guest reports.
After fleeing a traumatic childhood marked by an alcoholic mother and abusive father, Sandy Jetz was diagnosed with schizophrenia at age 23.
So when I was diagnosed in 1976, I remember being told that I was on a pathway to irretrievable madness from which I would never recover.
Schizophrenia and other mental illness can cause psychosocial disability, making it difficult to keep a home, a job, or participate in society. Sandy Jetz is now 72, a writer and a poet, but she says help was limited to a psych ward.
If I hadn't had the support, you know, financially and physically and socially and every which way from my friends, I don't know what would have happened to me.
Earlier this year, the Productivity Commission's review of Australia's mental health and suicide prevention agreements found 500,000 people with moderate to severe mental illness don't qualify for the NDIS. And now a Grattan Institute report has found 130,000 adults with the greatest need get nothing from the NDIS or mental health system. Grattan associate Mia Jesserin is a co-author.
Both the kind of population coverage and the intensity of support varies greatly between states and territories.
Grattan's report found the NDIS spent $6 billion last year supporting 66,000 people with psychosocial disability. So why are so many people with severe problems missing out? Mia Jesserin says they're recommending all levels of government design and deliver a new national psychosocial disability program with consistent, individual, recovery-orientated support funded out of the existing NDIS budget.
We know that providing upfront, timely psychosocial supports can, yeah, absolutely help people with housing, but also prevent them from experiencing hospitalisation, for example, reduce people's experiences with the justice system.
Advocates welcome the focus on the most needy people, but Homelessness Australia has reiterated international evidence shows the best way to help is to combine housing and psychosocial support. And the National Mental Health Consumer Alliance's CEO, Priscilla Bryce, wants greater involvement from the people affected.
Lived experience really does need to be front and centre, and that is absent from that. From the Grattan report.
In a statement, a government spokesperson said addressing unmet psychosocial support needs will be a central consideration for the next National Mental Health and Suicide Prevention Agreement, and people with lived experience are being consulted. Also, negotiations with the states continues on NDIS reforms and ensuring foundational supports.
Annie Guest there. It's only the second week of summer and already authorities are warning the bushfire season ahead will be difficult. New South Wales and Tasmania have been dealing with devastating fires over the weekend. 60 fires continue to burn in New South Wales. The Rural Fire Service says 8 of them aren't contained. 20 homes were destroyed on the central coast, most at Coolawong. And on Tasmania's east coast, 19 homes were lost. Tanya Dendrinos reports.
It's all just a numb feeling. It was like, yeah, 26 years built it and then stood on Brisbane Water Drive and just watch it slowly catch on fire and then collapse.
Coolawong resident Mark Quinlan says he's left with only the clothes on his back after his home was destroyed on Saturday.
I only had a pair of shorts and t-shirt on, didn't even have any thongs on. And yeah, everything from my grandparents through to mine that over the years. And of course, my partner Michelle's stuff as well, her family photos, you know, all gone. All gone in the blink of an eye.
The New South Wales Rural Fire Service confirmed 16 homes were destroyed at Coolawong on the New South Wales central coast, with another 9 damaged, while 4 homes were lost at Bulladilla on the state's mid-north coast. Inspector James Morris is from the New South Wales Rural Fire Service.
We saw more fires burning across the state in the last 48 hours. A lot of new starts from lightning that moves through the area with very little rain supporting it. So firefighters have been able to extinguish a number of fires, but we still have 60 fires, including a number of large, broad-scale fires burning across places like the Upper Hunter, up at Bulladilla. Thankfully, fire activity at the Central Coast has settled significantly, so firefighters are really starting to get the upper hand on that fire, but we know there's still a lot of work to do, particularly around getting people back into their homes and assessing the damage that has occurred over the last 48 hours.
The risk, however, isn't over, particularly for the fires yet to be contained.
At this stage, the main concern is still around that Upper Hunter, the Milsons Gully fire, particularly up at Bulladilla on the mid-coast with that fire burning in and around the M1 Pacific motorway. They're really the two main ones of concern at this stage, which still have a lot of containment work to be done on them. Thankfully, we are seeing much more benign conditions, However, given that we're still lacking in any kind of moisture in the ground, even on a warm and slightly windy day, that can still pose issues, and we could still see that M1 motorway closed at Bulladealer. So it's important that people continue to monitor the situation, stay vigilant, and stay up to date with local information through Hazards Near Me and Live Traffic New South Wales.
Natural disasters have been declared in six areas across New South Wales, with disaster assistance payments activated by the state and federal governments. Eligible residents can use the funds for emergency accommodation and essential items, with grants available for low-income, uninsured residents and additional support for businesses. Prime Minister Anthony Albanese spoke about the situation yesterday.
New South Wales in general is facing quite a difficult season, we suspect. Houses lost yesterday. Fortunately, no loss of life. That, of course, is always the priority.
Prime Minister Anthony Albanese ending that report by Tanya Dendrinos. The Weather Bureau did not issue a fire warning ahead of the bushfires in Tasmania last week because it says conditions didn't meet the threshold for extreme weather. David Bowman is a professor of pyrogeography and fire science at the University of Tasmania, and he's speaking here with Bridget Fitzgerald.
The trigger for these fires were extremely strong winds that came up like a rogue wave out of nowhere. But wind-driven fires are extremely dangerous because they are obviously driving fires very fast. And particularly this event meant that the winds were so strong that they weren't able to use aircraft in some situations, which means that it also flags that you can't have an over-reliance on thinking that aircraft are always going to be able to come and always put out an ignition, because in a wind-driven fire event, that just isn't true, and that fire is going to be escalating very rapidly because of the strong winds.
And given that heat element wasn't there, do we need to change the way that we think about fire warnings?
Look, I think that one of the things, we have a very unstable climate now, and so it does also point out seasonal forecasts that we weren't expecting very dangerous, or there wasn't like in people's minds that something very dangerous was going to be happening. We just have to accept the fact that with a very unstable climate, a fire situation, you can go from 0 to 100 in hours. And you've got to think about what that means, because that means that you might be having to activate a bushfire plan very quickly, not in days, in hours. So that's an enormous mind shift that we're asking people to be thinking about, that really the warnings now are that when you have dry vegetation, and that can even be in winter, that you can have these very dangerous fires. And so we're just living in a very dangerous fire world now.
Professor David Bowman from the University of Tasmania, and he's speaking with Bridget Fitzgerald. The Winter Olympics are 2 months away. They're in Italy, and because of our limited winter season, many Aussie athletes spend much of their time overseas. Reporter Floss Adams has been tracking their progress with some hopeful of a podium finish.
It's that time of the year when many Australians start flocking to the beach or preparing for their summer holidays. But that's not the case for snowboarder Tess Cody, who travels the world in the pursuit of an endless winter.
Probably haven't had a full summer since I was like 13, which is kind of crazy.
The Olympic bronze medalist knows what is needed for athletic greatness, and she's trying to achieve it again at the next Winter Games in Italy in February. But Australia is a country more known for hot weather than its snowy mountains, and these athletes often face more barriers than their European and North American counterparts.
You know, they grow up in these towns that are like 5 minutes from the hill that they went and rode at and stuff, and then I definitely spend like a lot of time on the road, easily 10 months of the year.
The athletes are overseas now for the final Olympic qualification competitions. But during the Aussie winter, many base themselves in Jindabyne in New South Wales' snowy mountains. A $12 million national sports training centre there is helping them stay and train on home soil for longer.
The just level of progression has really gone crazy. And especially now, I was like, there's some young kids around who are trying these crazy tricks, which is so sick.
For Olympic hopeful professional skier and Sydney local Daisy Thomas, the training centre is close enough to home life.
We get basically an extra 3 months being able to stay in our own country and train.
A performance airbag jump was also set up in 2021 for off-snow training. It's 17 metres tall, designed to train advanced tricks.
We've seen a lot of the Aussies do a lot better since we've had the airbag, because we can just have a bit of an advantage over the rest of the world, but also we can just train all year round.
But even the best laid preparation doesn't always go to plan. Daisy Thomas suffered a knee injury while competing in China last week and is currently being assessed by her medical team. Back in Australia, around 100 athletes of all levels train at the centre. Strength and conditioning lead Janina Strouts says it's helping give access to international competitions for the next generation.
So that by the time they get to a stage where they're an elite performer, they've already got a great capacity and base of physicality.
How's it going?
According to snowboarding coach Ollie Midgley, that next generation of athletes is determined and ready.
It's amazing the level of talent that we have here. They're punching above their weight, for sure.
And snowboarder Tess Cody wants our summer nation to have more eyes on winter sports.
It'd be cool to like have a bit more of those other sports that are different and exciting and like just sort of showing what other people are doing and having that a bit more diversity, I think, and like that'd be cool.
Snowboarder Tess Cody there, ending that report by Floss Adams. Living with vision impairment has many challenges. Being deaf on top of that presents even more. Yet thanks to emerging technology and creative adaptions, members of the deafblind community are proving that losing two of your senses doesn't have to affect your ability to live a fulfilling life. More now from National Disability Affairs reporter Naz Campanella.
Making a coffee, cooking eggs, and doing her hair is just part of Hale Espinel's usual morning routine.
When I wake up in the morning, I usually make breakfast before getting ready for work.
How she does it is a bit different.
I know the toaster is ready because I hover my hand just above where the bread would be, and then I check the bread and see if I want it for longer. I use a pod machine for my coffee, and to know that it's filling the mug, I hover my finger near the inside edge of the mug.
Hael is deafblind. She was born with a severe eye disease and started losing her hearing shortly after. Today, with the help of hearing aids, Hael is able to identify some sounds. And Canes and her guide dog Brassy help her navigate physical spaces and a life that can sometimes be challenging. Especially on her trip to work, travelling by tram and on foot. Information on public transport is mostly presented visually or through sound. Neither are useful for Hael, so she relies on an app that connects straight into her hearing aids.
1 minute to station, Victoria Street / Linden Street, number 124.
It indicates to me when I will arrive at my destination, and it tells me the stops along the way that we're passing.
When she arrives at Deafblind Victoria, where she works as a project manager, she greets colleague Michelle Stevens.
Hiya, darling, how are you?
Whose hearing and vision loss is more profound.
There really is a huge variety of deafblinders. You could be born deafblind. You could lose either your vision or your hearing later on in life. You could lose your vision hearing due to accident.
Their common language is tactile Auslan, signs formed and felt by hands. Michelle says being deafblind can be isolating, and low expectations can make it harder.
Because I'm deafblind doesn't mean I can't do anything. It just means that I have to do things differently.
After work, Hael will head home. She's done a lot to navigate the day independently, and she'll do it again tomorrow. To her, it's nothing special.
I'm just trying to live my life and enjoy it just like anybody else would.
Deafblind person Hael Espinel, ending that report from Naz Campanella. And that's AM for today. Thanks for your company.
Hi, I'm Sydney Peed from ABC News Daily podcast. Parents and teens are getting ready for life cut off from social media when Australia's world-first ban for under-16s officially starts on Thursday. The government says it will take time to remove all under-16s from the platforms, and it's becoming clear older users could get caught in the net. Today, tech reporter Jennifer Dudley Nicholson on what to know ahead of the ban. Look for the ABC News Daily podcast on the ABC Listen app.